Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Carl Calabrese. Carl, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Good to be with you. And I guess a mark of distinction here, being the last live interview of 2024.
Carl, I couldn't think of anyone better to round out 2024. And I got to ask you the same question I asked the Congresswoman last segment. How would you summarize 2024 in the year of politics locally and nationally?
Well, nationally, it's the year of Donald Trump. I mean, we're talking to people just last night. I mean, this guy is the most resilient politician in American history. There's no two ways about it. And even if you don't like him, I think most people have to admire his toughness, his fortitude. As somebody said to me last night, somebody who's got a ton of money, his own private jet, a beautiful wife, and mansions all over the world would have said a long time ago, I'm going to go play golf at Mar-a-Lago. I don't need this, you know what? But he didn't. He stayed in it, and he did what everyone thought would not be possible, given, four indictments and trials and two assassination attempts. It's absolutely unbelievable. And I was really pleased to see that Time magazine named him Person of the Year, because, that designation is not meant to be to name someone who's the most popular, or whatever. It's meant to designate who had the most impact on our country and the world, and Donald Trump certainly did that. And you can see the way foreign leaders are responding to him. I mean, he essentially is the president in waiting. The way Macron welcomed him to France with a red carpet, with trumpets blaring, with guards in formal uniforms, those are usually the types of accoutrements you see reserved for an actual head of state, not one who is waiting to become a head of state. So I think the world has come to the conclusion that unlike 2016, this is the guy they're going to have to deal with. I think they're more comfortable dealing with them. I think he brings to the table something that is very important, and that's certainty. With Joe Biden, it was always you were uncertain what he was going to do. He wavered. He was very indecisive. And at least now, these foreign leaders will know they have a decisive leader, and they'll know where he stands, and they'll know how to gauge their foreign policy with the United States accordingly. So the year of Donald Trump, just an amazing, amazing story, and a huge victory that no one thought was possible, both popular vote, electoral vote, Senate and House. So I give it to him. Locally, obviously, Byron Brown, vacating the office of mayor after being elected, five terms, and going to OTB. And that, of course, will set off a whole chain of events that we'll be talking about in 2025, as right now a number of candidates seek to succeed him in the office of mayor. So that's a story that's unfolding. It's a work in progress. But, Byron Brown leaving that office after so many terms, again, in politics, Joe, politicians of either party respect longevity, they respect toughness, they respect success at the polls, and Byron Brown checks all of those boxes. The amazing accomplishment to serve in an executive position where you're making decisions, and every time you make a decision, you've got one group that's happy and one group that's not. You do that over 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and the people who are not happy tend to outnumber the people who are, and that's why executives kind of outlive their welcome. He didn't do that. He's an amazing politician in that regard.
Speaking of the mayoral race, we already have a crowded field beginning to form. Carl, we've got James McLeod, Sean Ryan, Garnell Whitfield, Rashid Wyatt, who was on the show earlier, and obviously acting mayor Chris Scanlon. Out of those names of the declared candidates, anyone you see that has a leg up in this race?
Well, there are a couple who have distinct advantages right out of the gate. Obviously, Chris Scanlon, being acting mayor, has the quality of semi-incumbency. Even though the word acting is in front of his name, he's still the face of the city. He's still on television, multiple times a week, he's going to be making announcements that benefit different parts of the city. So you can't underestimate the power of incumbency. So that's his advantage. Sean Ryan is a state senator who has lots of money in the bank. The other candidates obviously bring different attributes to the table. Minority candidates certainly change the dynamic of this race. It remains to be seen who they draw votes from, be it Scanlon or Ryan. But I'll tell you what's going to be interesting, Joe. I'm hearing this buzz amongst Democrats a lot, and that is that the chairman of the Democrat County Party, Jeremy Zellner, would like to be a state senator. And so if Sean Ryan were to win that race, that seat becomes vacant. If that's true, that would be an opening for him to follow through on that wish. And it's not unprecedented. If you recall, back in 2010, Senator Dale Volcker announced that he was going to be leaving the state Senate after many, many, many years in that office. And at the time, the chairman of the Erie County Republican Committee declared his candidacy for that seat. But so did somebody named Pat Gallivan. And when it was all said and done, the party awarded their endorsement to Pat Gallivan, and he became senator and still is senator. So it's certainly not unprecedented for a county chair to decide to take off the county chair hat and put on an elected official's hat. So what I'm going to be watching for is what does Jeremy Zellner do in this race? Does he allow an open primary and not have the party endorse anyone and let all the candidates duke it out and see who emerges as victor? Or does he endorse someone? If he endorses Sean Ryan, that may give some credibility to that buzz going around about him being interested in the state Senate seat. It may very well be as what they call in poker a tell. So that's what we're going to be watching. We'll have to see how that unfolds.
Very interesting. You know, talking about Sean Ryan, we hear about the money he's had, right? He spent this last campaign for another term in state Senate, which, by the way, hasn't begun yet. He spent most of that raising money for this run for mayor. How important is the, quote, war chest in a local election like this?
Well, the war chest is important in every election, but as Kamala Harris proved, having lots of money and spending lots of money and spending lots of money wisely and productively are three different things. And so Sean Ryan does have lots of money, but the question is, does he spend it efficiently, productively, and wisely? Or does it get wasted on a lot of things like you saw Kamala Harris spend money on? Don't know. But I've been in lots of races where the candidate I supported was outraised in terms of funds and outspent during a campaign, and we still won. It's one component of a very complicated puzzle that has to be put together properly to win an election. It has to do with the candidate's personality, the candidate's level of energy, the message the candidate has, the support at the grassroots level a candidate has, the organization a candidate puts together to get out the vote. So it's more complicated than just looking at a bank account, but it certainly is important provided it's spent properly.
Carl, should the Republicans get in this race, and is there a name that comes to mind that could be competitive?
At this point, I don't have a name that comes to mind. I haven't heard any name come to mind. I haven't heard any potential Republican even put up a feeler for their interest in running for mayor. This is the conflict the Republican Party has had, Joe, since as long as I can remember, going back to the 70s. In order to build a party, you've got to run candidates. But by running candidates, you create competitive races and you bring out a bigger vote. And the problem for the Republicans is if they attempt to build the party within the city of Buffalo, they risk a bigger turnout in Buffalo, which now, that's has huge ramifications for a countywide race, be it county executive, county clerk, county comptroller, county sheriff. And so that has been the struggle that every chairman that I can remember has had to deal with. Most of the chairmen have come down on the side of let's forego building a party in the city of Buffalo in favor of not having competitive races, not having a big voter turnout in the city that will help Democrats on the county level. It's more important for the party to win the county races. So that's the dilemma they have. And until the Republican Party starts running serious candidates, not just for mayor, but for councilmanic districts in the city of Buffalo, you don't have a party that really is going to form up and be competitive on a yearly basis.
Is that how, if you were to suggest how they would start, instead of, you know, starting with a candidate for mayor, starting with a common council, so it doesn't, you know, draw people away from the county elections, as you mentioned?
Yeah, that would be kind of the compromise choice, to say, okay, we're not going to go for the high profile race of mayor, but we're going to pick a couple, maybe three councilmatic seats, and begin building a base that way, in sense of hopefully winning one, two, or three of those targeted seats. And that's how you begin to build a party at the grassroots up, and then maybe eventually taking the mayor spot. But the other problem that the county party has, as the Republican Party has, is that over the last number of years, two major first ring suburbs that used to be solid Republican, the town I came from, Tonawanda, and right next to it, Amherst, have now become Democrat. Both of those towns have all Democrat town boards. And Democrat candidates are doing very well in countywide races in those two big towns. The other town that used to be solid Democrat.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Democrat that on paper demographically looks like it ought to be solid Democrat is Chickawaga, but the voters of Chickawaga have now elected a majority of Republicans on their town board, and they elected a new state assemblyman from the Republican Party. So Chickawaga is a really interesting study in ticket splitting and how people who on paper look like they should be Democrats have moved away from the Democrat Party and gone to become very comfortable with electing Republicans. On the other hand, in Amherst and Tonawanda, just the opposite, solid blue. And so if you're a Democrat and you come out of the city of Buffalo with a big plurality, and you add to that pluralities in Amherst and Tonawanda, boy, I'll tell you, it's real tough to win a countywide race, because as you move south, as you know, Joe, you just don't have the population there that you do in that city and its first ring suburbs.
It is, you know, every time you mention Amherst, Carl, I have to say it's just so funny. You know, the street I grew up on, I remember as a kid, you'd have, you know, Republican and Democrat signs, right? When it came to election time, especially the presidential election, you'd have Bush signs, Kerry signs. I remember walking down the street. Now it seems like my parents' Trump flag is the outlier, and it was a bunch of Harris signs this year. It's funny how it's changed over two decades.
Yeah, it really has. A lot of that has to do with the presence and the growth of the University of Buffalo and the students that it brings in, and the faculty and staff that it brings in. But it certainly has changed from when I started in politics. It was a solid red town, and now it's become solid blue. Now there's been a change of leadership in the Republican Party, the town committee there, and the new chair is old and dear friend of mine, Bob Davis, who was chairman of the town of Tonawanda Republican Committee when I started as a councilman, then became chairman of the Erie County Republican Committee, had two very successful runs. Bob is an expert at grassroots politics, grassroots organization, and campaign organization, messaging. And so we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think you're going to see certainly a more competitive Republican Party in Amherst, but it could take a cycle or two to really fine-tune that new organization and become competitive again.
Now, focusing in on Washington, D.C., Carl, this story broke yesterday afternoon. Just want to get your thoughts on it. ABC News having to pay Trump $15 million and issue an apology in a defamation lawsuit.
Yeah, I saw that. Now, I understand that Trump is not going to be taking the money, but instead it's going to be paid to a charity or charities of his choice. But nonetheless, ABC will be paying it. It has to do with an interview that George Stephanopoulos did last, I believe, earlier in the year with Congresswoman Nancy Mace, where he repeatedly talked about how Trump had been convicted of rape. And, you know, that's not the case. He's never been convicted of rape. He was convicted of sexual assault in New York. And that in New York, the definition of sexual assault is very broad. It can be, you know, from telling a dirty joke, to much higher, but it's not rape. And he was not convicted of rape. And immediately Donald Trump issued brought a lawsuit, a defamation of character lawsuit, and rather than go to trial and face maybe even a greater judgment, ABC and Trump settled out of court for $15 million, not an insignificant sum. So I think this is huge. I mean, I've never had much use for George Stephanopoulos as a journalist. I think he's his career as a Democrat operative, he's taken that with him to ABC. He shows his bias on a weekly basis, and he can't help himself. And so, you know, he's an anti-Trumper, and he used words that Trump took offense at and followed a legal course and now has the satisfaction of knowing that George Stephanopoulos just cost his network $15 million. I'm sure ABC can't be too happy with that. And it may send a message to these other mainstream media networks that we maybe better be a little more careful with the language we use when it comes to talking about Trump and or criticizing Trump.
In the White House, 36 days left for President Joe Biden, Carl. And I know you and David talked about some of the pardons, obviously the Hunter pardon. But it seems like Joe Biden was not done with Hunter when it came to pardons.
Those 36 days, Joe, can't pass quick enough because it's not just pardons of, you know, I mean, it was bad enough with Hunter. But I mean, you look at some of the other pardons that he has issued. Chinese nationalists accused and convicted of espionage. He pardoned a judge who was getting kickbacks from a private for-profit juvenile detention center. He was sentencing kids to that center and getting kickbacks for everyone he sent. And by the way, that judge comes from guess where? Scranton, Pennsylvania. Old Joe from Scranton, we heard many times since 2020. All kinds of other things he's doing that, as I said, the days just can't pass quick enough. He's selling off the wall so Trump can't resume building it as quickly as he might like. You know, he's ignoring the border. He ignored inflation. He ignored America's decline on the world stage. He just had the government just issued a contract with Social Security workers that allows 42,000 of them to continue to work out of their homes for the next 5 years, even though the occupancy rate of federal buildings in D.C. is like 16%. So, you know, so the government continues to pay rent for buildings they're only using a fraction of, and he just let 42,000 workers stay at home for five more years. So, I mean, he's going to continue to be doing everything he can to sabotage this Trump term. You can see it across the government, you know, trying to spend money before Trump can get it and issuing all kinds of roadblocks to try to prevent Trump from undoing some of the things that the Biden administration did. So, as I said, the 36 days can't pass quick enough for this guy to just exit stage left. Left is where he came from, and left is where he ended up.
You know, Biden selling off pieces of the border wall, is this kind of like Bill Clinton allegedly taking the W's off the keyboard just to slow Trump down?
Well, that was, you know, that's kind of a high school prank, taking keys off, that can be fixed relatively quickly. But, you know, selling off portions of the wall, given what it takes for the government to procure anything, to go through all the rules of procurement and the time it takes to deliver things, supply chain issues, production issues, this is a lot more serious. And, you know, he opened up the border to more than 11 million illegals. Many of them unvetted, many of them without language skills, many of them without any job skills. We're seeing the cost of that across this country in towns that are far removed from the border. See it in New York City, where the mayor has said that over $1.5 billion the city has had to spend to deal with all of these migrants. We see it in our own Maryville school system. I think they've had to spend over $400,000 a year to deal with the migrant children. That's the number I've heard. But this is an issue we're going to be paying for fiscally, socially, culturally, public safety-wise for many, many years to come. And this guy blew up the border, and that's going to be, I think, one of his major legacies because, again, this problem is not going to disappear once Trump becomes president. We're going to have to live with the consequences of those 11 million people, and you know that was Joe Biden's doing. He did that on purpose. He blew it up on purpose. That was the aim of the Democrat Party, I believe. I know, you know, this is the left loves to disparage the concept of replacement theory, but I've always believed that this was the biggest voter registration drive in history. Democrats have to replace those blue-collar union workers, and now Asians and Hispanics and African-American males that have left their party. They have to find new people to register and make dependent on government. And boy, they got a pool of 11 million people now to try that.
Do you think that will be more his legacy than the economy and inflation?
I think so, because, as I said, I think, you know, Trump can fix the economy and inflation, and he can fix that in one term. But the migrant problem and the after effects, the aftershocks of 11 million, many people, unvetted, many unskilled, many without language skills, coming into our country and our cities and towns, that's going to last a lot longer than I think inflation is going to last. And as I say, we'll be talking about migrant issues, migrant crime, education, cost to cities and towns, you know, just the cultural upheaval. We're going to be talking about that for many years to come.
Carl, before we let you go, Bills, Lions, who do you like?
Well, I like the Bills. I always like the Bills. You know, I'm a little apprehensive. You know, they've shown a couple of games now with some major weaknesses. Hopefully, this coaching staff, which I think is excellent, is going to plug those holes against the running game and try to get some pass rush. You know, you think about how much time and money, draft choices, this organization has put into defensive linemen to rush the passer. And, you know, the first round draft choices, it just has not produced to that level yet. And maybe they've come up with a scheme today that can produce pressure on the quarterback. Because, as you know, Joe, you put pressure on the best quarterback in the world, and all of a sudden they don't look like the best quarterback in the world anymore.
That's right. I'm hoping this is this could be a Super Bowl preview, Carl.
Absolutely.
I tell you, can't wait for it. Hey, Carl Calabrese, want to thank you for your appearances on Hardline this year, Fridays with David, appearances on A New Morning, and all your help through the debates and special elections and election night. Always great talking with you. Look forward to talking with you again in 2025.
Same here, Joe. Thank you for having me on. I really do enjoy your show and your questions very much.
Thank you so much. That is Carl Calabrese. You can hear him every Friday with David Bellavia here on WBEN.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.